Namaste. I'm not sure if you can see me, Soumya.
We cannot see you yet, ma'am.
Yeah, okay. I'm just sharing. I think you should be able to see now or not yet?
Not yet. Yes. Now we are able to see you.
Okay. Namaste. Sorry, we had some technical hitches, but let's get started off. So I just wanted to talk about one or two things that, you know, I thought was relevant from last week's class, which came up in the question session. I hope you have actually seen the Excel sheets, which are available, the Excel sheet which is uploaded with the question and answers. We will do that right after the prayer. Sadashiva Samarambham Shankaracharya Madhyamam Asmadacharya Pariyantam Vande Guru Parampara Om. Okay. In the last class, we covered Purusharthas as well as the scriptures. And during that time, people had one or few questions which have already been answered. One particular question was on what is the difference between Bhashyam and Vartikam. Now, Vartikams are in poetry form and Bhashyams are in prose form. Both are commentaries. One of them is a commentary and the other is a commentary in poetry form. That was the only difference, and I thought it was relevant for everybody to know, so I'm clarifying that. Without any further delay, let's get into the topic for today. And let's quickly do a recap of what we learned in the last class. We learned that there are three kinds of human goals which normally, I would say 90% of the human beings pursue, which is Artha, Kama and Dharma, which is also referred collectively as Preyaha. Then we also have Moksha, which is, referred to as Shreyaha. And I explained to you why Moksha is, or Shreyaha, is superior to Preyaha, because it gives you freedom from the other three goals and getting attached to it, which is subject to arrival as well as departure. Artha, Kama and Dharma are some things which can come and go, and therefore moksha is freedom from Preyaha. In any case, we will be revisiting moksha as we go through the rest of the sessions. So we will revisit this subject again. Right? And then we moved on to the six layers of Shastram, and we saw in detail what are all the layers. We said Shruti is Apaurusheya Vishayaha, and then we said Sutra, Smriti, Purana, Itihasa and Bhashyam are all Paurusheya Vishayam, which come from the Shruti in a way, but they are all part of Shastram, and all of them try and help humans achieve the Purusharta. And I also talked about how human beings are different from animals because they have the thinking faculty, the intellect, right? And therefore, a free will to know what is right, what is wrong, and actually take decisions on their own, right? So that is the biggest difference. And with that, they try and achieve the Purusharthas. And Shastras help us attain Purusharthas. Shastras can help us attain Artha, Kama, as well as Dharma and Moksha. All the four Purusharthas we can achieve through Shastram, right? Now, having discussed Purushartha, we are now moving into what we call Vyavastha, right? And Vyavastha is nothing but the infrastructural requirements for achieving these Purushartas with the help of Shastram, right? So we have both Varna Vyavastha and Ashrama Vyavastha. Varna Vyavastha being the Vyavastha that takes care of the infrastructure from a society perspective, and Ashrama Vyavastha taking care of it from an individual perspective, right? So in Varnashrama Vyavastha, in Varna Avastha, we have the infrastructure for accomplishing the Purusharthas from a society level, and Veda focuses on both material as well as spiritual goals. Now, mere material success is worthless, actually, if you see. Because if you see Arjuna, he was actually in the Mahabharata war, having everything. He had all the arts, he knew so many things, he was expert in, you know, his the yuddham, the warfare and everything. But still, because he was spiritually weak, he could not, in spite of having taken a decision to fight a war, a dharma yuddham, in the last minute, he had a problem, which is what caused him to actually, you know, put down his bow and arrow in the middle of the war and say, even before starting the war, and say that he will not fight the war. So, mere material success is worthless, right? And Veda has understood that it is important to, you know, focus on this also, on spiritual as well as material goals, and therefore has created this Varna Vyavastha, right? And there are two schemes, which is, one is Varna and one is Ashrama. We will first see the Varna Vyavastha, then we will see the Ashrama Vyavastha. So, as I said, Varna Vyavastha is at the society level. Now, Varna Vyavastha is a sociological scheme, and it is a macro scheme taking a society into account, while Ashrama Vyavastha is a scheme in which the individual growth and success are kept in mind. Individuals put together alone form the society. So, both Vyavasthas put together provided the infrastructure for achieving the Purusharthas. Now, in Varna Vyavastha, the whole humanity was divided into four groups, right? And each Varna Vibhaga was functioning as an organ of the society. There were four Varnas: Brahmana Varna, Vaishya Varna, Kshatriya Varna and Shudra Varna, right? Now, whenever you speak of a Varna or any kind of classification, we would always ask a question: on what basis are you actually classifying the Varna, right? Like, for instance, if I take this group which is attending this course, we will ask, how all can we divide them? Is it by age? Is it by gender? Is it by the profession that they work, right? You can divide them based on any of the categories. So, when you talk of four Varnas, the question to be answered is, what is the norm for classifying the Varnas? So, how is this division made? Now, traditionally, three types of divisions are talked about. The first one being Guna Vibhagaha, or character-based classification. Now, in the character-based classification, what personality trait makes me a Guna Brahmana or Kshatriya or Vaishya or Shudra is what is looked at. Now, if you divide the personalities into four kinds, as per the Shastras, you have the first one, which is a spiritual personality, right? Solitude loving, inquiry loving personality, right? Now, in this, people like to sit quietly and calmly and think and introspect. Now, not everybody who is, you know, in active work life can have this kind of personality. Even as children grow up, you notice that a few children have this ability to spend hours by themselves, while there are other children who are always running. And as they grow up also, when you observe around you different personalities, you will see that a few people are very different in terms of loving solitude and just being happy with themselves. So that is the first kind of personality, which is the spiritual personality. The second one is a dynamic personality, or a selflessly motivated personality, right? Now, in this, you would see that there are a lot of people who love to actually do service for the society, right? They like to, constantly be doing work, but then they are selflessly motivated. whatever they do is in public service generally. You will see that, you know, they are this kind of people who love to go out, help people. Whatever they do will be for the upliftment of others or organizing things for others. That's a dynamic personality, but selflessly motivated. Then you have a dynamic personality which is highly self-centered. Basically, the person is very active, wants to do a lot of things, but it's always for him and at most his family and nothing beyond that, right? So his primary aim is to amass wealth for himself. He's not really concerned about whether he is going to do anything for anybody else. Both 2 and 3 have a personality where you are very less likely to focus on any of the education related or spirituality related matters, sitting in solitude, etc. Right? Both 2 and 3 are dynamic personality. Now the 4th personality is a passive personality, which is basically a lethargic, motivation-less personality. Now this comes closer to the animalistic mind, which is more instinctive based, as we discussed in the last class, right? The only thing is they are very useful. Such kind of people follow orders and can execute work very, very, very nicely, but they are not self-driven. They do not have self-initiative and they are not very, very highly energetic and motivated. This is the 4th kind of personality. Now, this is the guna vibhaga that we saw. Now, the 1st personality is referred to as guna brahmana or tattva pradana personality. This is a very, very important term that is getting introduced now. Sattva pradana personality. Bhagavad Gita talks a lot about the 3 kinds of guna, sattva, raja and tamo guna. We will speak a little about more about this maybe when we come to the session on creation, etc. But guna brahmana, what the personality that we talked about, the spiritual personality, is sattva pradana personality. And guna kshatriya is the shuddha raja personality, which is active with no selfish motives, but they want to help the society and do work for others, right? This is guna kshatriya or shuddha raja personality. The 3rd one is guna vaishya or ashuddha rajaha. It is ashuddha because of the selfishness, right? So ashuddha raja pradana personality is guna vaishya, and it refers to the 3rd one which we saw just now, which is selfish but dynamic personality, right? And guna shudra is tamapradana personality that we talked about. Now it works actually if you go and sit and reflect on what percentage of the time you feel you fit into each of these categories, and therefore what is your predominant trait amongst these 4. This has got nothing to do with the jati or any of these. This is purely based on your personality, and that is guna vibhagaha. Now the 2nd one is profession based classification or karma vibhagaha. Now this is also very, very important, because those days the society was divided into 4 kinds of profession. The 1st one being karma brahmana, right? A life which is confined to scriptures, right? Veda adhyayanam, Veda adhyapanam, Veda parayanam and Vedic interpretation, right? Now, scriptural learning and teaching, basically all the commentaries and sub-commentaries. If I have the time today at the end of the class, I'll show you a slide on what kind of learning goes into even, minimal scriptural study. And we have the Veda Purva Bhaga also. So basically, Veda Purva Bhaga and Veda Anta Bhaga, people were getting by heart those days during this in the Brahmacharya Ashrama. Then we will see that shortly. And the Karma Brahmana was expected to spend all his time in this scriptural learning and teaching because it was so involved, right? And then other than this, one had to also learn Sanskrit, because without Sanskrit, you would not be able to understand this at a later stage in life. So to study the original without any translation, you needed to learn Sanskrit, you needed to learn the scriptures, you needed to understand the scriptures, And this obviously needed a dedicated group to focus on this full time, right? And the last one is very, very important, interpretation for the changing society, right? Because as centuries go by, you need to start interpreting the Veda. An example is, we have an electric crematorium. Now, if you want to know whether it is right or wrong, you will need somebody who can throw some light on this, right? So, it's either a sannyasi swamiji or it is a learned Brahmin who can give you, who can interpret and tell you and advise you accordingly. Similarly, when you do any functions, say, outside of India, what should the sankalpam be? How should the tithi be interpreted? All of this are, you know, in changing times, you will need to, you know, interpret it, and therefore, Vedic interpretation also becomes very, very important as part of the Karma Brahmana's role. And other than this, we also have Karma Kshatriya, and Karma Kshatriya in today's terminology, we can, you know, compare it with all forms of public service, administrative services, you know, the military, anybody who does work, social service, any of these would come under Karma Kshatriya. Now, Karma Vaishya is all forms of commercial activities. Anything that is done for profit, business, etc. will come under Karma Vaishya, right? So, and then the fourth one is all kind of labor, unskilled or semi-skilled labor. Everything comes under the fourth category, which is Karma Sutra. This is just basically based on the different types of karma. It's got, so the first categorization was based on guna. The second category is based on karma. Now, the third one is based on vibhagaha. Now, jati vibhagaha is purely based on the norm of birth, based on the janma or the family into which a person is born. In Sanskrit, birth is called jati because it comes from janma and derived from the root jan. So, based on the birth, I could, you know, belong to a Brahmin family or a Kshatriya family or any of these. The point to be remembered, especially when you are on a spiritual journey, more to be remembered, is birth cannot give superiority to anyone or inferiority to anyone. As far as the gradation goes between the four, there is no gradation birth-wise. There is no gradation profession-wise. And guna vibhagaha, there is definitely a gradation. A guna brahmana is certainly superior to guna kshatriya, who is certainly superior to guna vaishya, and who is certainly superior to guna shudra. Especially when you are on a Vedantic journey, you need sattva pradana personality to pursue that. So, as you proceed more and more into the Vedantic journey, your guna has to get transformed into sattva pradana more and more. So, through guna vibhaga, when you see, there is definitely a gradation, and every one of us should strive to be a guna brahmana, right? Now, in the guna shudra case, they are more closer to the animals or instinctive. Basically, if they want to get up and do something, they have a goal and they want to achieve something, that doesn't work that easily because of the tamo guna associated with them. So, gradation wise, definitely, sattva pradana or guna brahmana is a much superior category. And Prahlada is an example from the mythology of guna brahmana born to a rakshasa. Right? So now with respect to the choice, right, we obviously do not have a choice with respect to our birth, right? But profession-wise, when we take up a profession, now we can take up a profession based on our character. Now, if the person is a sattva pradana character, it is very, very difficult for that person to, you know, take up a guna vaishya role because it doesn't go, and every day there will be conflicts between what he thinks, what he wants to do, and what he needs to do in the profession. So, the first preference for a profession should be a character-based choice. The second one is a family-based choice. The reason being, okay, in the family, maybe we are predominantly rajoguna based or, you know, sattva guna based, or we have a mix of rajo and tamo, therefore we should do this, that. So based on family, you could take the second choice, that is the profession choice. The third or definitely not recommended choice, and these days mostly because of our society having changed more towards artha and kama, the money-based choice comes in. For the sake of money, taking up a profession can only cause disharmony in the person as, you know, life progresses, right? So karma yoga can be ideally practiced. We'll be seeing karma yoga in the next class. Karma yoga can be ideally practiced if you love what you do, because the very performance gives you the tripti, right? So, and when you do this with Ishwararpana Bhava, which we will see in Karma Yoga class, and accept the results as Ishwara Prasada, that becomes true Karma Yoga, and it can give us tripti, right? So, with respect to profession, if we can align character with profession, that is the best. In summary, the spiritual sadhanas are to improve our guna to guna brahmanatvam, and we all should become guna brahmanas ultimately. Whatever be our birth, whatever be our profession, we need to become a guna brahmana. So that is the journey of the person, of any human being, while trying to achieve the purusharthas, he will also work on going towards guna brahmanatvam. That is why the infrastructure was designed that way. Now, this is only part of the infrastructure that we have seen, which is the varnashrama, varna vyavastha. Now, we also need to see the ashrama vyavastha, which will support this, because both infrastructures are needed for the spiritual journey as well as the religious pursuits, right? Now, in the case of ashramas, I'll take questions towards the end, because we seem to be having some problem with the audio, so I don't want to, you know, disturb now. In the ashrama vyavastha, we have four ashramas. Brahmacharya ashrama, right, which is the stage of a student life. Then we have grihastha ashrama, the stage of a householder's life. And three, vanaprastha ashrama, the stage of a hermit's life. And sannyasa ashrama, a monk's life of renunciation. These are the four ashramas which have been designed as part of the infrastructure for an individual to follow from the time he is of an age where he can be left alone, typically 6-7 years of age, all the way until death, right? So these were the different ashramas that were prescribed, and each one of these has a very different objective and what we can achieve during each one of them, right? Now, what is an ashrama? Let us see a little bit of background. A deliberate, willful and well-directed effort is called shramaha. And here, what is the effort that we are trying to drive? The effort is a spiritual sadhana. Ashrama refers to a stage of life in which a person practices spiritual sadhana. Now, our entire life is a spiritual journey, right? And there is only one ultimate goal. Now, all other goals are a means to the ultimate goal. This is a very beautiful aspect of our culture, where in every ashrama, actually the spiritual sadhana is also entwined, and we don't even know that we are progressing towards that slowly. If you see, right from Brahmacharya ashrama, we are actually pursuing a goal which will ultimately lead us to the final goal of moksha. We will see it as we go through each of these avastars, right? So, it is a hidden agenda of the Vedas and the Vedantas to take us actually through the journey of, say, our artha, kama and dharma, and make sure that we will finally reach moksha. However, many of the human beings seem to be missing this point now, because we no longer have the ashramas in the true sense. In the next class, we'll also see what can we do now to try and follow as much as possible the good things that, you know, the Vedas have taught us in a different form, in the form of Karma Yoga. We will see that in the next class. But right now we will focus on the four ashramas and what were they meant for. Now, in the Brahmacharya ashrama, very important point is always there was an education for a profession, right? Now, it was definitely not for the best job or a maximum salary. Scriptures say that this is secondary, right? Education is definitely important, but the primary goal is not, say, the best job or something that earns you maximum salary. The primary purpose is refinement of character, right? And it is oriented towards individual as well as social growth and the transformation from an instinct-based life to a value-based life. That is, a cultured human being is what was the objective of the Brahmacharya ashrama, right? Prakrita Purushaha to Samskrita Purushaha was the journey in Brahmacharya ashrama. So basically, the person was handed over, right, to the guru at that stage in life when he could be molded to actually become get himself educated in not only the Vedas and the Vedas in total, plus whatever profession he needed to pursue, whether, you know, it was going to the war front or whether it was, you know, serving the society. Brahmacharya ashrama catered to everybody in the first few years of their life. Now, there is a very important shloka which goes this way. Maturagre adijananam dvitiyam maunji bandhanat tatrasya mata gayatri pitatu acharya uchyate. Now, this particular shloka means that you are actually, you know, you had a jananam with a mata and a pita, but the dvitiya one, the second one, it happens during maunji bandhanat, which is actually tying that string around the girdle, but this represents more upanayanam, and therefore during upanayanam the father is treated as the acharya and the mother as a gayatri, and therefore this is the second birth of the person, right? Twice born, dvija. So this happened at the time of the upanayanam, and this quote is from Manusmriti. You can refer to this. A very important shloka which says that the father is the acharya and mother is the Gayatri Devi. Now, what type of education should the Brahmacharya ashrama teach? Now, A, what is the ultimate goal in life was taught very clearly right at that stage, right? That is the beauty of the Brahmacharya ashrama, right? When the person was leaving the Gurukula ashrama, he knew that the ultimate goal was moksha or the spiritual sadhana, right? So if you see, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad clearly says, Yova edadaksharam aviditva atma lokat praiti sa kripanaha, ataya edadaksharam viditva asma lokat praiti sa brahmanaha. Basically, it says that a student must know the spiritual goal. So this conversation happens between Yajnavalkya and Gargi, right, in the 8th section of the 3rd chapter of Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, where Yajnavalkya, in response to a question from Gargi is a lady. So there were ladies in the, those days who were so learned. So Yajnavalkya is responding to Gargi, saying, "Oh Gargi, whoever leaves this world without knowing this absolute truth is pitiable, but he who leaves the world after knowing this absolute truth is a knower of Brahman." Basically, this means that the ultimate goal is moksha in life. Now, the second thing, the first one was, what is the absolute goal, right? What is your goal in life? And the second point was, some form of religious worship every person should be taught. Why? For what reason, right? Now, many people have this question on, you know, why is it that the rituals are so strenuous? Why is it that they have a set of processes and they say you have to do this that way only, this way only? Say you have to have a bath like this, you have to cook like this, you have to serve like this, right? You have to get up at this time, so many number of times you need to have a bath. So many kinds of rituals are there. Now, it was very much focused on inculcating discipline in the person, because that was the age when we could inculcate discipline, right? So therefore, the students in the Brahmacharya Ashrama were made to do a lot of things in a very formal, rigid way as part of the rituals that used to happen in the ashrama. And this also gave rise to developing dynamism, right? Now, what do we mean by dynamism? Now, they used to do Surya Namaskara. They used to go around the temples, etc. Today, we are doing various kinds of exercises in substitute of that. But if you look at many of these, whatever exercises that go with the rituals, that is itself, if you do that, your body will never get, lazy. So it's a very, very good way of making sure that we had a flexible and dynamic and, a good body and figure which was trim. And all the time we were doing some exercise or the other. So the second reason for the religious worship was dynamism. And third was devotion. Very, very important, because all relationships in this world are temporary or ephemeral. The only relationship, no human relation, whether it's your spouse, your children, your parents, all of them will arrive and depart at some point in time. The only strong relationship that you can build with is God. And if you do not focus on that during the younger age, during Brahmacharya Ashram, it is not going to come when you need it in times of need, like in Grihastha Ashrama, when you go through a lot of ups and downs in life. It will be very difficult for us if we do not have a permanent relationship to hold on to. So the third purpose was devotion, right? And this was also, all these also helped people develop values in life. Values were taught right then, and at the end of their Brahmacharya Ashram, when people came out, they had very, very important values in life, what we refer to as Daivi Sampat in Bhagavad Gita. We will, you can read about it in the Gita. There are Daivi Sampat and Asuri Sampat. Asuri Sampat, which are not to be practiced. Daivi Sampat, to be adopted and practiced as you go on in life. So these were the three different objectives of the education. First one being knowing the goal itself, the ultimate goal. Second one being inculcating religious worship in, early childhood and during your young age. And C was values in life. Now, the second ashrama is Grihastha Ashrama. Now, family life was meant for religious pursuits. Now, family was a unit, right? And individual goals were not the focus, right? Now, it was based on all the four purusharthas, and in the rituals, if you see, the husband and wife had a role to play. It was always a joint endeavor. The husband could not do anything without the wife, right? And while one person was sort of the breadwinner of the house, the other person helped in doing everything, and they always did the rituals together. And the results were also available to the family, not to an individual in Grihastha Ashrama. Right from the time a person got married, the Agni that they, develop at that time, it is used all the way until the person passes away. Now, the husband and wife both do all the rituals together right from the time they get married, right? And it's a joint endeavor which results in common results for the whole family. Whatever they do was for the entire family. And it also helped, the Grihastha Ashrama helped in developing titiksha or tolerance, which you will see is a very, very important prerequisite for a spiritual journey. We will talk about it when we come to the section on sadhana chatushtayam or preparatory disciplines before we get into the topic of Shariratrayam, etc. In topic 5 or 6, you will come to it. Now, titiksha, tolerance, accommodation, forgiveness, all of this developed because a family always had 3 generations or 4 generations, and you had to give in and stay with others. Obviously, the elders also had problems with the children also had difficulties, but over a period of time, this accommodation and forgiveness developed, and it resulted in a stable family. Now, it involved sacrifice from each and every member in the Grihastha Ashrama. And today, if you contrast with the economic independence of every member being key now, nobody is dependent on anyone, right? So there is no interdependence today within a family level, or it is very less. And also, the likes and dislikes keep changing. And more importantly, we don't have family time at all today. In most houses, even eating together, even playing together is a problem. And I don't think we ever meet together for praying. Some families at least meet during festivals. And I find that it is becoming extremely difficult to meet as a family and do anything together. So this is also a reason for some of these values or knowledge about Vedas and what can Vedas give us. We don't have time to discuss any of these because we don't sit together as a family. In fact, as Swamiji puts it, we don't even have time now to sit and watch TV together because every person watches their own program in a separate room. So it boils down to almost zero family time. Now the third ashrama, Vanaprastha ashrama, is a training period for gradual withdrawal, right? Now, the body was becoming weak and the body starts sort of deteriorating at that age, and the mental speed with which you want to execute things, you're not able to do it physically. So when the gap starts setting in, if we have spent some time on the Veda in the early part, like, those days, people use that ashrama to enjoy seclusion and turn towards self, right? So they could actually turn inwards and start reflecting on whatever, they have learnt in Vedanta and Veda Purva Bhaga to a lesser extent. They start moving more towards Vedanta Bhaga, or they sort of spend their time in, acquiring Sadhana Chatushtayam, which is a preparatory discipline for, the spiritual journey, right? And after the Vanaprastha Ashrama, which was a stepping stone basically to Sannyasa Ashrama, the Sannyasa Ashrama is an ashrama for spiritual education, right? Now, with an introvert mind, they lived in seclusion, right? And after renunciation, everything, right? Primarily of the ignorance and the ego. And they are mentally prepared to lose anything in life at that stage. Right, getting ready to lose the losables, as Swamiji puts it. And it is important for all of us, basically, to mentally go through all the four stages. Now, in today's world, we may not be able to go through a sannyasa ashrama like the traditional way, but being in the family itself, one can practice internal sannyasa by unnecessarily not interfering in the in the next generation's work when they don't need us. This is a practice that we can try and inculcate, right? So in each of these ashramas, we can imbibe whatever the ashrama's objective was and try and follow it to the extent possible. But Swamiji, as he puts it, in recent days, the focus is more on Pancha Mahayagna, which we will see in the introduction, in the Karma Yoga session next week, on how we can do different things while trying to follow as much as possible from each of these ashramas, right? So sannyasa is, in a ritualistic form, is called ashrama sannyasa, in which a person physically renounces everything and moves to the forest, or, he moves to an ashrama and he gives up on, his wealth, etc. We are not even talking about that. We are only saying internally, can we try and give up and focus on spiritual education. Now, I just want to show a few more slides, and then, I will open it up for questions. Right? Now, the replacement for a Brahmacharya Ashrama, or I wouldn't say a Brahmacharya Ashrama, because it may not be possible to complete this during the course of our own school education. Now, these are the minimum studies that a serious seeker needs to go through, right? Tattva Bodha, Bhagavad Gita, Mundaka Upanishad, Kena Upanishad, Katha Upanishad, Kaivalya, etc. Now, this is a series which is prescribed for a serious seeker. Now, this will take its own time as we you know, go through our ashramas, because none of us can leave our profession and full-time focus on any of these. So this is an indicative list. Now this is the minimum set. And as we progress in our lives during all these ashramas, we can focus on these also in the site. There are various ways and means by which we can attend classes and sort of pick up any of these. Now, whatever is being taught in Introduction to Vedanta is a summary of what is there in the very first point book that is referred here called Tattva Bodha. So, I just wanted to make sure that I talk about this also before I open it up for questions. Soumya? Are there questions? I can't see. Soumya?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
So, we'll take the questions. I'll select a few questions which are directly relevant to the today's topic only. So, the remaining questions will be answered in the Excel, right?
Yeah.
So I'll go. So, one question which has been repeated by a couple of people is there any specific age grouping for the four ashramas, like for Brahmacharya and this one, the other ones?
Okay. Now, if you take a 100-year span, generally the first 20 to about 25 years anyway goes in Brahmacharya ashrama, or it might just step into Grihastha ashrama. And then the next 25 years goes into Grihastha ashrama. So, roughly you can take it as, you know, 7, you can't take anything below 7. So, 7 to about 25, and then 25 to 50, and then 50 to 75, and after 75. Now, the problem with after 75, starting a spiritual journey, I think it will come with its own issues of memory and other things. So, once you start early, right, during Grihastha ashrama, getting exposed to these scriptures, it will help you focus on it full time during Vanaprastha ashrama and Sannyasa ashrama.
Okay, thank you. The next question is, can a person be a Guna Brahmana and a Karma Kshatriya?
Yeah, absolutely. You can have, and Guna Brahmana is the most important one, and as I said, from a spiritual seeker point of view, that is the ultimate guna that one should cultivate. But you can be a Karma Kshatriya, there is no problem at all.
Are these four ashramas prescribed for both men and women?
Yes, the unit is always a family, it is both husband and wife. So, if you see, traditionally, I'm not talking about these days, those days it was the boys who were sent to Gurukula ashrama, but beyond that, all like whether it is rituals or learning, the learnings, fundamental learnings from the Veda, Vedanta, etc., there were ladies also involved, which you can see in some of the Upanishads also.
So, maybe that is what, there is another related question. So, what should a girl do and learn during Brahmacharya stage? Boys go through Upanayana and do Gayatri Japa and learn the chanting of Vedas. So, what can the girls?
Basically, the girls can also spend that time in learning all these various, sotrams and shlokas. In fact, my PPT has some of those also. I didn't go through this. I will put up the PPT. For instance, there is a, if you see, there is a slide on very useful text for developing Sadhana Chatushtayam. The second slide, it's come up on the screen now. It has Bhajagovindam, Pratasmaranam, Samalaja Daitashtakam, Gita Dhyana Shlokas, etc. All these, if we can spend time, right, just memorizing during the young age, even without understanding the meaning, it doesn't matter, because at a later stage, it will help us understand the meaning.
Okay. Next is one question. So, Vanaprasthashrama in present day context is focused on seclusion from ritualistic life in effect.
Not exactly ritualistic life, because as long as you are in the Grihasthashrama with children, even beyond 50, we still have unfinished work. You have to continue with them. But the percentage of time that you spend on, you know, unnecessary, say, work in terms of profession or in terms of wealth management, all of this, if we could reduce that and reduce our commitment to other things and start focusing more and more on spiritual learning, that is what, you know, is advisable. And one more point, instead of rituals, we can say, instead of focusing on rituals like, say, Ganapati Omam and other things in the younger age, you might start focusing on, you know, Gita Yajna and, you know, those kind of things at a later stage.
Okay. Is religious worship of any kind necessary for being a spiritual being?
Yeah, this answer you will get in Karma Yoga and as well as Upasana Yoga topic that you're going through. In short, a religious life is needed for developing Chitta Shuddhi. You will see that. And so therefore, it is very, very important for us to not let go of the religious life until we reach that state of spiritual journey where, you know, Jnana Yoga becomes primary in our life. So when you go through the four different yogas, you will, you know, understand the importance, relative importance, and how it changes.
Okay. There's one question on this Varna thing. So can we consider the Manusmriti as the authority on Varna Dharma? If yes, since it is Paurusheya, how do we conclude it as an authority and how do we address such concerns?
See, Manusmriti, as I also responded in the Excel sheet, was like the constitution for those days society, right? Now, in Manusmriti, there are many things which cannot be followed. So, that's why I said we need a learned Brahmin or a sannyasi, jnani, who can interpret this for us and tell us what of this needs to be followed and what need not be followed. That is very important.
So in the present day context, society has all the guna vibhaga and karma vibhaga mixed irrevocably, is it not?
Yes, it is. It is because we most of the brahmanas don't do the work that was listed here, and similarly it is applicable to other varnas. Therefore, amidst all of this, what becomes important is guna brahmanatvam. If you are a spiritual seeker, developing guna brahmanatvam becomes the primary goal of your early years.
Right. Yeah. So this is a related thing. So nowadays there are Westerners who chant the Vedas and study Vedanta. Can they be called guna brahmanas?
Yeah, as long as the sattva guna, we will see more details about sattva guna. So if they are sattva guna pradana and studying the Vedas, meditation, Upasana, Dharma Yoga, religious things, all of this will help us develop Sattva Gunam. So, it is a good possibility that Westerners who are involved in this will be Guna Brahma.
Even though you say the four ashramas apply equally to both genders, I don't see any example of a lady sannyasin in our sampradaya. Am I right?
Oh no, there are a lot of lady sannyasinis even today in all of the you know, missions. And then you even if you see mythology and if you see our own history, there are a whole lot of people who are sannyasis. In fact, Gargi, the person whom I quoted just now in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, was a lady jnani, right? So there are lot of people who are like that. And then Maitri, Yajnavalkya's wife, she is such a great jnani, a spiritual seeker, right? So you have many such examples. It is not that, you know, they were not there. Avvayar also was one in the Tamil saint. You have lot of people like that. And in the recent years, there is formal induction into Sannyasa Ashrama itself in Chinmaya Mission as well as in Dayananda Saraswati's Ashtavidya Gurukulam.
There is one more question. Can the three gunas exist among the members of a family and still perform effectively?
That is what happens in every family. There will be a mixture of the three gunas, and in some people sattva guna will be higher, in some people tamo guna will be higher. Now, this tolerance, forbearance, titiksha, all that we are going to see comes as a result of putting up with all these people. And even amidst all of that, developing a sattva guna and finding time for meditation and pursuit of this kind of, you know, scriptural studies is what makes that person very unique. So it's a journey.
If one develops a balance of sattva, rajas and tamas consciously, to what guna classification will such a person belong?
You can try, but as per even what we are going to see, the creation, right, it is not possible to have the three in balance, right? Like the law of equilibrium works, the three never work in balance, because you will also see that that is how the creation itself came about, because they were not in balance. You have different compositions even within the creation. So one of them will be more, you know, predominant than the others.
Right. You about those spiritual works. Is there any order in which we have to study these books or topics?
Yes. The first one that I spoke about, if you see, it's definitely the order is important, at least from my own experience as well as what Swamiji recommends for everybody. The first one that you do is Tattva Bodha or Introduction to Vedanta. It's okay. The second one that is prescribed for Grihastashrama people is Bhagavad Gita. Grihastashrama means even Vanaprasthashrama. And then you have all the Upanishads in that order. It has been ordered this way because one builds on the other. So Mundaka, Kena, Kata, Kaivalya, Taitreya, Mandukya Upanishad and Karika, up to that minimum. If you go through in that order, it really makes sense because each one builds on the previous Upanishad's teaching. So if you see the blue one, Kaivalya Upanishad does not have a Shankara Bhashyam. All the others have, and the green ones are optional as written there. This is as per what Swamiji recommends. But that is why I have numbered them, because they have to be done in that particular order. And the last four is okay, any order. And the rest of the slides that I put up, the order doesn't matter because it is for developing sadhana chatushtayam, which we will see, right? But the first slide, the order is important.
Right. Thank you very much, Madam. So I think we have reached the 9:30. There are a few other questions which are, of course, can be answered, but as I said, not directly relevant to maybe what was covered in today's class. So,
yeah, only
as I said, thank you all for the questions, and all questions will be answered, and we'll put it up in the Excel after this.
I have to complete with Purnamada, Soumya. Just give me
yes,
half a second. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevamashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Thank you. Soumya, we can take the other questions in an Excel sheet, and I will put it up exactly like last week.
Sure. So just give me one moment. So there were a couple of people who were asking how to access those files. So
yeah.
I'll just show this one quickly. So for those who want to know how to access the materials, this is our course page, right, the introduction to Vedanta. So if you just scroll down, so I'm sure all of you would have already done this, so you'll have to log in and click this take this course if you haven't done this so far. So once you've done that, just scroll down, so where you will see the list of lessons. So the first lesson, say class 1, is here. Click on the lesson title. So here you can see the video, you can watch the whole video, and you can also download the files from the site. You can download the PDF of the presentation, view the video on YouTube if you wish, and the question answer session, the Excel file with the answers by the teacher, so it is also uploaded. So please, for every class, it will be uploaded here. So please access those files and use them. Okay. So thank you. Can we close the session, madam?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, sure. Thank
you. Namaste all.
Namaste.